It's the confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Pittsburgh Mayor Bill Peduto Monday presented a 2021 budget totaling $564 million. That's $44 million less than this year's budget and does not call for tax increases. I'm in the office of the mayor. Welcome back to the confluence.
Thanks, Kevin.
Earlier in the pandemic, during the shutdown, you indicated that this year the city could face a deficit of up to $100 million. What's the latest estimate, and how are you filling the hole?
Well, right now we're looking at about $55 million, and that will be for the 2021 year. This year we put in a hiring freeze immediately. We did not fill vacant positions. We called for every department to cut expenses by 10%. Some of our revenue came in better than what was projected, namely property and payroll tax. So we've been able to stave off what we saw as a potential $100 million deficit. And the deficit for the 2020 budget was paid for with the funds that we have been saving for the past 7 years. We built out a reserve fund within the city budget of $120 million. You always want to have around 10% of your budget in a reserve fund in case of a disaster. Most of the times it's either a man-made or natural disaster. In this case, it was a global pandemic. And fortunately, we've been financially prudent over the number of years. That option is now gone.
Yeah. So is your reserve fund depleted?
The reserve fund is depleted under the we still have money in it, but we still need to be able to keep a surplus to be able to keep a bond rating. And so we can't spend that money like we did this year. We're going to remain fiscally disciplined in this. So we put together a budget that basically holds off the furloughing or the loss of jobs to city employees until July 1st. Now that will give us the opportunity under the new Biden administration to make our pitch as to why cities all across America need a stimulus package for the 2021 and 2022 budget years.
You mentioned the city would be okay as far as layoffs until about July 1st. If, worst case scenario, you don't get the aid from Washington, what is that going to mean in terms of layoffs, in terms of spending cuts?
We'll mean approximately 634 city employees will not have their job come July 1st. It would affect every single department, and at that same time, it will have an effect on the ability for us to deliver services, especially critical services, right in the middle of a global pandemic.
During the racial injustice protests, spring and summer, there were calls for defunding the police across the country and here in Pittsburgh. Your budget calls for, I believe it's 9.8% cut in funding for police. How is that going to be implemented? Are you reducing the number of officers? Where is the funding being cut within the police bureau?
Well, there's a couple of different things that are happening. First of all, you have to understand that the police work under a union contract. So you simply can't abolish the police or cut their salaries. I mean, not unless you are a union buster or someone who doesn't believe in the collective action of anybody to organize as workers. Secondly, as we look at the budget, we will only be putting in one class in 2021, and we may be putting in zero. Over the past several years, we've been putting in three.
So you won't be filling positions that open? Is that what you're saying?
Correct. So through attrition, as officers retire or move to different jobs, the number of police officers will be coming down. We still want to be able to maintain, to be able to have adequate numbers in all of our neighborhoods. I don't have one neighborhood in the city of Pittsburgh that is saying they want less police.
When we talked in the summer, you said something very similar, and this was during the protests. So will this mean less patrols, less officers in neighborhoods, longer response times?
We believe that through attrition in the 2021 calendar year, that we will still have enough officers to be able to continue not only responsible response time, but also to be able to continue with the different programs that have been created to lessen violence, to create greater opportunity in neighborhoods, and to be able to create an entirely new part of our crime prevention unit, which will concentrate into the neighborhoods, but more importantly, into critical communities, such as those that are homeless, those that are suffering through addiction, and those that have mental health issues, creating 24/7 coverage to enhance what we have presently. Right now, those people are that find themselves in a situation that are in one of those types of communities are responded to with a police officer.
Right. So let me ask you about that. As part of your reimagining policing, you announced recently a partnership with Allegheny Health Network. So social service workers would accompany police officers, not replace them, because let's face it, some people facing crisis can be dangerous. They might pick up a weapon. And so would there be accompaniment of the social service workers by a police officer to be there to protect just in case?
Of course. And if you talk to anybody in law enforcement, you'll find out that the most violent situation is domestic, where things that happen either directly or indirectly from that incident puts the officer and the people involved at much greater risk. So you can't just send in a social worker. You can't not have a police department. You cannot defund the police to the point where that social worker and that victim of violent crime don't have somebody there to protect them. You know, it's an interesting argument, but it's not one that is backed with policy research when we talk about abolishing the police. But at the same time, we don't need to simply respond to those types of situations with somebody whose job it is to enforce the criminal code. We can also be able to provide services on a continued basis to the victim and to those that are in the situation where either addiction or mental health issues are limiting their ability to succeed in life. And with 24/7 coverage, and we're converting a couple of our old ambulances into units that will be on the street citywide, we're going to be able to do that beginning in 2021.
Are you using some of the funds that would have been part of this nearly 10% cut for the police budget to do that?
Well, it's not direct. It's not like this money came from. It is an allocation based off of the police budget.
All right.
So the 10% of that budget is going into all of these different programs that we're doing.
All right. One of your constituents sees nearly a 10% cut to the police bureau, which you've explained, and more than 8% to the fire bureau, and says, "Mayor, can you guarantee my safety, my security? Why are you confident the citizens of Pittsburgh will be safe and secure with these cuts to these important public safety bureaus?"
Because even with these cuts, we are not down to the levels of manpower that we inherited in 2014. So when we look at the number of police officers that we have today, it's slightly over 1,000. We had 825 in 2014. We also had much higher crime statistics in 2014. When we look at the number of firefighters, the same case. We have been able to bring in recruits through the past 7 years to be able to fill the ranks. It was our hope that we would be able to get to the point with police where we would be able to open a seventh zone, a zone that would be based upon the recognition of the nighttime economy in Pittsburgh that we have now, that would be responsible for the North Shore, downtown, the Strip District, and the Southside Flats. That is not a reality at this point. If we do get assistance from Washington, or if we do are able to bounce back from the COVID pandemic, that will still be something that we'll look at in the future.
Pittsburgh Mayor Bill Peduto, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. The Sloan Digital Sky Survey has been creating detailed three-dimensional maps of the universe since 2000, mapping the inner workings of nearby galaxies and exploring the makeup of our galaxy, the Milky Way. The most recent phase of the survey, SDSS-5, began collecting results in October. Donald Schneider is a member of the executive committee of the SDSS-5 Advisory Council, and he's the head of the astronomy department at Penn State University. Welcome to The Confluence.
Thank you very much for having me.
Don, this phase of the project has three key programs, I understand, called mappers: Milky Way Mapper, Black Hole Mapper, and Local Volume Mapper. What do these programs hope to find, to accomplish?
Well, they're designed to address some of the most important questions that we have facing us in astronomy. And we're unique among the large surveys in that we have telescopes both in the northern hemisphere in New Mexico, the southern hemisphere in Chile, so we can reach the entire sky. The Black Hole Mapper is the one that I'm most familiar with. It has a very sexy title, I think you'll agree. We're studying things called quasars, which are among the most luminous objects in the universe. Some of them produce 100 to 1,000 times the energy that our entire galaxy produces, and yet they can produce that energy in something the size of the solar system. And we believe that the power source is a supermassive black hole, mm-hmm. which has a mass of the order of 100 million times that of the sun, up to several billion times the mass of the sun. And so this black hole is pulling the matter in from the surrounding regions, and as the matter falls into the black hole, it reaches velocities that are comparable to the speed of light. There are collisions. You can imagine that this is very energetic, and so they can produce these enormous luminosities.
So what have you learned so far about quasars, and what do you still want to know?
One is very fascinated by, you know, the total mass, because these black holes are thought to be the seeds that form galaxies. You may know that our galaxy has a black hole, actually. And as you go to greater distances, you're looking back in time, right? If something's a billion light years away, we see it as it was a billion years ago. And we can actually see quasars to distances of on the order of 10 billion light years, which means we can see what the universe was like very early in its evolution. And so by looking at quasars at different distances, we can map out how they grow and change in time.
And therefore how our galaxy changed?
Well, it may be telling us something about how galaxies are formed. Mm-hmm. Right. Our galaxy is undergoing lots of changes even today. If you look on timescales of hundreds of millions of years, we think of our galaxy as static, but it actually is a very dynamic system.
This survey, you told us about how we can look back a long time about the formation and evolution of galaxies. What do we know about our galaxy today versus back then?
Well, the thing that struck me the most over my career of what we've learned about the galaxy is that when I was going to school as a student, the galaxy was a nice, quiet system of stars. It turns out it's a very dynamic and occasionally violent place that we have. We do have a black hole in the center. It's not a billion solar masses. It's only a few million. But the Milky Way is actually quite a cannibal.
What do you mean by that?
Imagine you're a small galaxy and you're in orbit around our galaxy or traveling through space, and you happen to approach us too close. The tidal field of the Milky Way can actually tear the small galaxies apart. Okay. And it's not that it tears the stars individually into pieces, but imagine you've got a galaxy that has a million stars, a small galaxy, and it approaches ours. The tidal field of the Milky Way is stronger than the internal gravity of the small galaxy, and so the stars are stripped out and become part of our galaxy. And that was one of, I thought, the great discoveries of the first phase of the Sloan Digital Sky Survey, which was not designed to study stars, but we, by just accident, so to speak, discovered these streams. And what happens in when these small galaxies are eaten, the stars string out along a stream. Have you ever seen these simulations of colliding galaxies where you get these arms that form?
Right.
Have you seen that? Yes. Well, the small galaxies get stripped, get turned into these arms, and we see the relics of it today, in that you can see stars that clearly were once associated with each other because of their motion, but strung out through the galaxy.
Finally, both as an astronomer and as a person that maybe looks up at the night sky, do you ponder different questions when you're looking at the digital data that you receive versus what you see with your naked eye when you look up at the night sky?
It's a very profound question. When I was a student, the digital age really hadn't started. And so when you went to the telescope, you actually rode the telescope. I worked at Mount Palomar. You'd actually go out every night and sit in the cold and ride the telescope. You know, you'd be about 70 feet above the floor, and you'd look out, and there's just a sense of wonder, right? It's just amazing. You know, how did this come to pass? I'm sure that's why I became an astronomer. I grew up on a farm looking at the night sky. I just thought it was, you know, fascinating. Now, with the digital world, everything is much more efficient, much more effective. But to me, you asked me as a person, I think there's a little romance lost between riding a telescope, even though it's 30 degrees. You're looking at the stars and sitting at a computer typing a few things to make lines appear. But what we can do now compared to what we could do 40 years ago in terms of learning about the universe, it's just amazing. Just orders and orders of magnitude over what we could do when I was 25 years old.
Donald Schneider is a member of the executive committee of the Sloan Digital Sky Survey 5 Advisory Council, and he's the head of the astronomy department at Penn State University. Don, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. I enjoyed it very much.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. You can find more from this and past episodes of The Confluence online at wesa.fm/confluence and through your favorite podcast app. Thanks to our team, Helen Wigger, Tom Hurley, Isabel Schmaler, Julia Zenkovich, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.